Well, what are we to make of Ecclesiastes 12? It's clearly a description of Solomon in old age, but it forms a sort of a bookend with chapter 1. By that I mean that what you read in chapter 1, you sort of encounter the same themes in chapter 12 at the end of the book. This is quite common in literature, in biblical literature, and in literature of the time. So chapter 12 forms, to use the fancy word, an inclusio with chapter 1. In other words, the stuff in chapter 1 connects with the stuff in chapter 12. Well, what have you got in chapter 1? You got Solomon describing how he was able to have whatever a man wanted. He indulged himself in building projects, he gathered to himself all kinds of food, and enjoyed whatever kind of food he fancied eating. He had musicians, went down the path of music, then he got into architecture, did whatever he wanted, huge building projects. And with women, he picked up whatever kind of woman he wanted. He had 1,000 women. He indulged his sexual desire. He did whatever he wanted. And now he's an old man, and as I read Ecclesiastes, he has lost his faith. And indeed, the historical record is clear. It states clearly that in his old age, he turned away from Yahweh and turned unto idols because his wives turned away his heart. So let's go through this description of Solomon's old age in verse 3. Let's start. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men will bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those who look out of the windows are darkened. Well, the Good News Bible sort of interprets it really. Then your arms that have protected you will tremble, your legs, once strong, will grow weak, your teeth will be too few to chew your food, and your eyes too dim to see clearly. Well, he said that he had given his eyes whatever they fancied, and he'd explored all kinds of food. What is the tastiest food? Imported food from here and there. Now he says, well, my eyesight's failing. I can't see. I gave my eyes whatever they wanted, but now I can't see anymore. Food, yeah, well, my teeth are too few to chew my food, so I'm not really into eating anymore. Then verse 4, the doors shall be shut in the street when the sound of the grinding is low. And one shall rise up at the voice of a bird, and all the daughters of music will be brought low. I think he's saying that now he is not interested in listening to music because he's pretty well deaf. He can't even hear the noise of the street outside. He can't hear the mill even as it grinds, and he can't hear music when it's played. And he's suffering from insomnia and nervousness, etc. And yet this was the man who had gathered to himself singing men, singing women, every kind of choir. He'd gone right down the path of music, absolutely had all the resources he wanted to do that. And now he's pretty well deaf, and he's certainly tone deaf. Verse 5, they shall be afraid of heights, terrors will be in the way, the almond tree shall blossom, the grasshopper will be a burden, and desire shall fail. Well, the idea, I think, is that he's afraid of heights, walking is difficult and dangerous, his hair is white like an almond tree, he can hardly drag himself along, he's just shuffling around, and desire has failed. Sexual desire. He has no more sexual desire, no more sexual interest. And yet, he had devoted himself to women. He'd lived the life of an absolute womanizer, and those women had turned away his heart in his old age, but now sexual desire has failed. Verse 6, before the silver cord is severed, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is broken at the spring, or the wheel broken at the cistern. Again, the Good News Bible, I think, sums it up. The rope at the well will break, and the water jar will be shattered. I think he's saying that the rope at the well breaks just as does a silver cord. He sees himself as just an earthenware jar. He may also be a golden bowl, but he's just an earthenware jar all the same. And all his opulence, he realizes, could not cover his weak earthenware humanity. There was no cosmetic fix for his humanity, although he tried so hard to do it. And really, he comes to the conclusion that I suppose so many have come to in old age, that, well, I had it, but now I can't take it with me. And so the point really is that all that self-indulgence was an utter waste of time compared to death. And therefore, he could only look back and think, ah, yeah, I remember when I chased women and got whatever I wanted. I remember when I explored music and had choirs under my control. I remember when I had all the kind of tasty food I could imagine. And so for life that's lived in the flesh without faith, the past is always better. And of course that fits in with, I'm afraid, a basic human tendency to think that the past was always better. I mean, Israel in the wilderness thought it was better in Egypt. Well, it was like concentration camps in Egypt. But they decided that concentration camp existence was better than what they had as they were marching to the kingdom. And so, as I say, for believers, it's different. But for unbelievers, the past was better, today is pretty awful, and tomorrow is awful, just eternal death. Whereas for the believer, it's the difference. Absolutely the other way around. Yesterday was terrible. I was in the world. I was in Egypt. Today is a lot better. But tomorrow is an eternal future. Tomorrow I can't wait for it. And I think that people's attitude in old age is perhaps a litmus test of really where they stand spiritually. If all you can do is look back with regrets that I can't enjoy it anymore and I can't take it with me, what a tragic waste, what a failure, basically, of spiritual life. Whereas if we just can't wait to look ahead and can't wait for the future, can't wait for the coming of Jesus, and in a sense, we can say with Paul, I have a desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is far better. Well, that's the stuff that faith is made of. This is the whole meaning of the gospel of the kingdom, that for us, this life is not all. And we can confidently look forward to God's kingdom, realizing, of course, that for all the decisions and attitudes we had in this life, we shall come to judgment. But if the driving pattern in our life, if the driving core heart position was, I can't wait for the kingdom of God, I long to be in the kingdom, I long and love the appearing of Jesus, then, as Paul says in 2 Timothy 4, all them that love his appearing shall be saved. It is as simple as that. And so don't do what the world does, which is to waste your whole life to try to get that second house, that bigger house, that nicer car, that wonderful food, those fantastic holidays, all those relationships. Ah, not this one, but that one. Ah, not her, but her. Ah, not him, but now him. Ah, okay, not him, but this one. This is all a searching for the end of the rainbow. And most people die before they've achieved a fraction of what Solomon got. But even if you got it all, as he did, then, as he says, remember the days of darkness, for they are many. That in the face of death, and life is so short, it's pathetically short. Blink your eyes, and your kids are grown up. Blink your eyes, and you're like pretty well on your grave planks yourself. It's so short. It really is so short. What is it? And yet people can't see that. And this is where having the hope of eternity ahead of us so radically transforms human life now.